If you're ready to confront your destiny, if this is the moment that you've been praying for, tune in and listen to your cosmic cheerleader, Commander Lady Athena, for cosmic pep talks for closet Christ. The show is the voice of the Ashtar Command. The call is for you to step forward into your greatness. Be listening on Wednesday. We have an appointment with destiny.
Greetings in the divine love of the one life that pervades all beings, all worlds, all dimensions, and all universes. I'm Commander Lady Athena, and you're listening to the voice of the Ashtar Command, Cosmic Pep Talks for Closet Christs. This evening our seminar topic is All Occurs as It Must. All occurs as it must. So if you're ready, take a deep breath and call your divine self forward to occupy fully your mind, your biosphere, and flood your field of awareness with being, consciousness, and joy. Take another deep breath and flood your field of awareness. That is the truth of your being. Sat, eternal existence, chit, ever-expanding awareness, ananda, ever-pervasive, all-encompassing bliss. Anything less than that is a departure from reality. That we are here on Earth to question, understand, well, to a certain degree, and transcend. It's not necessary to understand illusion other than to recognize it simply is not true. Why waste time trying to make a reality out of that which is transitory at best and noisome at most, because it involves unfinished business, unprocessed stuff, issues we've yet to look in the eyeballs and question, and simply dismiss as being of no eternal significance whatsoever, and you let it go like water off the back of a little duck. But do we do that? Well, generally not. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this dialogue, and we wouldn't be sitting here listening to this seminar. So since something is keeping us here, let's look at it tonight. Look at it without excuses and without dodging the issue. All occurs as it must. Now, this probably makes a lot of people angry to hear that. Because, you see, we kind of favor our victim scenarios. We like our conspiracy theories. We like this battling with the dark forces and with our inner shadows. We like all that stuff. Why? Well, it keeps us something somewhat occupied, let's say, on our way to full realization. But all of it is a big nonsense. So let's raise, if you want to, if you choose, our point of view to another perspective this evening. And first of all, ask for that which is your mentoring upline, your spiritual friends and well-wishers that stand in with you as part of your group, soul, part of your friends in high places, if you will, that form a great assembly around you. They're kind of like your cheering team, your backers, those people who are rooting for you. And when you give them a little bit of wiggle room, sometimes they can insert some good inspiration into your mind. They don't tell you what to do, but again, they encourage and keep you motivated moving forward in your life. You got to keep moving to whatever is next. So ask, if you will, if you'd like, that whatever could personally be brought to your attention tonight that you need to confront and make peace with, that would be brought forward for you in the night travel, because if you can work it out in the night travel in your spiritual bodies, it's a heck of a lot easier than working it through on the physical plane. A lot can be resolved in the night travel if you simply ask that that be done. But then don't obsess about your dreams when you wake up in the morning. Just know that that's working out your stuff. When you have things that happen in your dreams that seem like dreadful scenarios unfolding, realize that now it doesn't have to happen in the physical. And just drink some water and shift your energy. Listen to some uplifting music. Pray, whatever it is you do, to center yourself and let it go. You don't have to obsess about illusions or you're working through things in the dream state. Your daytime is just as much a dream state as your nighttime. It's just that we think that this day is real and the night is simply a dream. But when you fully awaken, you'll realize you've always been dreaming. Your past lives are dreams, your daytime is a dream, your nighttime is a dream, and we're all totally sound asleep. And when we awaken, there's only good news. There's only the love that remains. That is your true identity. So confront quickly the things that rattle your cage and push your buttons. Confront them quickly so you don't have to carry them forward into yet another dream episode, i.e. incarnation on Earth. So as long as you identify with your physical body, your mind, and your emotions, you are bound to the law of karma, that is to say, cause and effect. And you transcend it only through spiritual realization and awareness. When you awaken beyond thinking of yourself as being your physical body, when you are able to get above into the intuitional levels, above the gerbil cage of constant thought generation, where you can say, oh, I'm not my thoughts. Those just flow like a river through my awareness, but I am not my thoughts. And then you get above the storms of your emotions, and you realize, oh, wow, those are just like waves that come in and they go out, and I'm not my emotions either. Wow. What am I? You, again, are existence, eternal existence, ever-expanding awareness, and all-pervasive joy or bliss, ananda, satchitananda. That's who you are. That's what you are. So the cosmic avatar, Satya Sai Baba, has stated that all occurs as it must, and that each has in their life exactly what they deserve and have earned. So, that's a bit irritating for most of us to hear, I think. It gives the ego not a single inch to hop in. It's taking full responsibility for your self-generated and your self-perpetrating life. And in this, Sai Baba is addressing the fundamental law governing all life within the lower planes of duality, which is karma, which is simply the law of reciprocity, of action and reaction. Every action on any level produces an equal reaction. very simple, very fundamental. And there's no great being in the sky that's wreaking down judgment on us. You know, so many things are happening on the planet now. And there's the common, phrase, oh, it's an act of God. No way, no how. What's happening on the planet, aside from it being just simply what happens every 26,000 years, and often every 13,000 years, what's simply happening is the change of the equinox, change of the vibration, change of the polar alignment, change in the consciousness perspective of the indigenous sentient life forms on this planet. And yet people call it an act of God. Well, it is in the sense that God is the creator and indweller in creation, as everything and everyone in creation, as all that exists, but not as an individual that is determined to punish you and torment you and wreak these dreadful events to chastise. But, you know, when we are not in control of our anger and our hatred and our constant warring within and without, we do upset the forces of nature, which do react in storms, volcanic eruptions, earthquakes, and storms. And that is a form of karma. Cause, in this case, unbalanced, unbridled hatred, vengeance, and abuse of human beings to other human beings. And the result, the earth reacts, because the earth itself is a sentient being. So again, you're seeing the karmic repercussions of not being centered in our true self, which is simply, absolutely pure, unconditional love. So, this is a fundamental and entirely impersonal law that pertains to every life form, every individual, and much more so for humanity, because they're consciously aware. They, unlike animals that usually operate from instinct, have a conscious choice. They have an inner conscience, which is the God principle within, speaking and guiding. And so they're held really accountable, because they can never pretend that they don't know. Our conscience always lets us know when we are violating the law of love. So the primitive inhabitants of Earth used to attribute whatever happened to either the wrath or the favor of the gods governing the forces of nature. And the religionists likewise attributed the unfavorable events to the devil or wrath of God, and the favorable to the favor and blessings of God. In both approaches, superstition played a major part, with no real awareness of the impersonal operation of the law of karma. So you could say that religion and spirituality are largely defined by where the blame is cast and responsibility is accorded. In religion, the blame is usually cast upon the devil or dark forces and evildoers in general. And responsibility is generally placed on a god that is seen as a governing parent of sorts, doling out punishment or reward, you know, according to our good or bad behavior. However, in spiritual awakening, general spirituality, comes the realization of personal responsibility and accountability. We have to begin to be aware of the effects that we generate and set in motion through our thoughts and actions. Everything comes not from the body. The body is inert. It's the mind. It's the thoughts that cause the body to then act out according to the motivations and the desires and whatever that's generated at the mental level. And in spiritual awareness and awakening, God is realized as the indweller, as the indwelling spirit, and the guiding conscience. So you begin to experience that divine being, the beloved, I like to call it, as within you and also around you, because you live and move and have your being in the consciousness, in the body, if you will, of that which is greater, and infuses every quark of existence with itself. So you literally are in God all the time, and God is literally in you as you all the time. So that's a really beautiful realization when you have that experience. And when you have that experience, you become absolutely filled with a love that you feel like you're just absolutely going to burst. You can't contain the love in your normal state of consciousness that comes when you touch into your real self, the beloved within you that is you, for the first time. It's a feeling very much like falling in love. I remember when I had the experience, I felt like, oh my gosh, I fell in love so deeply that I was lovesick, literally lovesick. Everything I looked at sent me into ecstasy. It was like I had never seen the life around me before. Everything stood out in incredible clarity and beauty and sweetness and endearment. Let's just say that's what awaits anyone that has the real desire to experience God. I absolutely promise you that will be your experience. You will have an experience like that if you really, truly want it. If you really want that with all your heart, you will have it. But you need to want it with all your heart. And I did. And it's never left me. You know, that's for me, about 43 years ago, 44 years ago that first happened to me. And it's not left me. You know, sometimes it's stronger because I'm more focused on it than at other times. But generally, it has remained. And that's how you can tell the difference between something you've experienced only intellectually in theory and concept and what you've actually experienced within yourself, within your own innermost being. Because if it's that, you will never lose it. If it's in your head, you can change your mind. You can have doubts or you can question it later. But if you've really experienced it and gotten it into your heart, you will have that forever. So truly, a spiritual person is one that takes full responsibility for everything that occurs in their life. And that's where the passing of the buck stops. You quit blaming the devil. You quit attributing it to some alien race that tampered with your mind. You quit making excuses and projecting the blame outside of yourself. And you begin to sit inside the realization that the self with a capital S is all that exists. In Sanskrit, that's called the Atma. And the Atma is the spirit that became all. It's everything. And it's who you are. so that every single seeming individual is but an embodiment of that self-same Atma. Only one spirit. So we can talk about oneness, but it really becomes oneness when you realize that the Atma is the indweller. That is the one beloved that indwells every single being, whether or not they're aware of it, whether or not they're in touch with that level, whether or not they're able to fully embody it, whether or not they don't embody it at all and they're acting out purely in ego's shenanigans. But that is the truth. There is one spirit. So when you recognize that and realize that, which all saints and mystics and realized people do, then you just look beyond all the other nonsense and you just realize, this is myself. Tat tvam asi. This also am I. Or aham, I am. That I am. So when you look at another and you can say, I am that. I am that. And you own it all and you realize it at all. And you love it all and you have compassion towards all beings. Because you know, ultimately, everybody's going to awaken and realize they've never been here at all, except in a temporary little distraction, let's say, that caused one to look into separation for a time, perhaps to experience it as an interesting dream. But upon awakening, you find it was just that, just a dream. So, this realization, rather than binding one fully to the earth, actually releases so much energy that up till now has been expended in resisting evil and fighting the evildoers. You have no idea how much energy you waste trying to battle the evil and the world. What you're doing is feeding energy into perpetrating that belief system, that thought form, that karmic dance. And when you are able to raise your consciousness to another perspective, i.e., and look at it from the higher awareness, you can see that clearly, that you're only fighting yourself. And that's the proof of that, is that you have agitation in your mind, upset in your emotions, and you're never really, really at peace. You feel anxious, fearful, angry, paranoid. You know, all of those things should let us know that we're looking in the wrong direction. We're barking up the wrong tree. But very few people ever tell you these things. Practically no one does. Practically no one. They're more fond, generally, in the new age, and even in the old age, of blaming conspiracy theories. You know what a conspiracy theory is? It's but one more of the ego's many stories that keep its agenda perpetrating division, separation, and conflict going. That's all it is, making somebody else wrong so that you can feel like you know something. However, it's only in ignorance that one looks out upon the world and judges what is taking place. It's proof that there's no awareness whatsoever as to what is really occurring. People think they're in the know. Oh, do you know that so-and-so is going to out the so-and-so, and then the so-and-so is going to happen? You know, with a little spiritual awareness, you can see what nonsense all of these theories are. So if we could see, which of course none of us can, the many lifetimes which have gone into creating the current global conflicts, We'd silence those critical comments, our political rants, and the slanderous posts against world leaders and anyone who has the right to cast the first stone. Wouldn't you have to be perfect to cast the first stone? The only one that's perfect is the Christ. And that's who you are when you drop all the nonsense. You are the Christ. You are the Beloved. You are the one you have been seeking. Yeah. And that one, like Jesus of Nazareth, would turn to the accusers of anyone and say, whoever is without sin, you cast the first stone. And of course, all the stones get put aside, and everyone walks away in shame. Because no one has the right or enough insight and wisdom to truly judge. And those that do, which are members of the very, very advanced spiritual hierarchy, they would never do that. They would realize here is a soul that is as yet unrealized, that still is working through the karma of the lower nature. But they will awaken in time. So the approach is one of understanding and compassion and patience to allow that soul to unfold in its own timing. And you know what? Sure, we would like to see peace on Earth. Well, most of us anyway that aren't really enjoying the wars. And most of us would like to see the nations embracing each other in commonality and goodwill and laying down all of their instruments of destruction. But you know what? That's not what is actually taking place on this planet, is it? And if you look at history, it's just been a repetition again and again and again and again of war. And if you could raise up high enough, had enough insight and ability to hold your awareness in the higher levels of the soul plane above the timeline, you would witness throughout history these same groups of individuals exchanging costumes, cultures, and roles, but perpetrating the same conflicts over and over and over again. And this must take place for eventual karmic resolution and restitution by both conflicting parties. Only that will finally end the conflict and clear that karma. Another thing to consider is that the Earth is not a place of peace. It's governed by the laws of polarity and duality, where differences and differentiation prevails. It's an arena where these differences can be experienced and combated, and where they can actually prevail on every level, so that the lessons of forgiveness, compassion, tolerance can be practiced and must be practiced, and therefore learned and eventually transcended into unconditional love, what should be God consciousness or Atmic awareness. So, you know, it's really interesting to hear the cosmic Christ avatar, Satya Sai Baba, state that President Bush, for example, and Saddam Hussein had karma together. And that was really what was taking place with the attack on Iraq. You know, we can't judge that. I hoped it wouldn't happen, but I knew when it did, we were in for a long, long, long siege, which, of course, we have been. It was not a good choice. It was part of that old paradigm, eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth, that is the fuel and fodder for all conflict, you know, under the law, quote, quote, the old law, rather than grace. we now come under a covenant of grace, which I've spoken about so many times. And that covenant of grace enables us to step into and out of conflict and into a transpositioning above that karma. You're lifted like a deus ex machina, a great machine that comes down like in the ancient Grecian theater and lifts up the person that is to be rescued out of their dilemma. And that's what grace does. It completely collapses the time-space continuum through divine love, and it just lifts that person into a different level entirely. And we can always ask for that grace. But to have grace, you have to also have mercy. You have to have that mercy to resist not evil and to turn the other cheek and to not engage in the conflict. You know, once you got your dander up and you're engaged in the conflict, the ego's won and the soul steps back, because the soul will not step into where there is conflict. The soul, your true nature, is one of peace, shanti. It doesn't get involved in that stuff. So the soul backs off, and the ego has a go at it whenever you start to fight and attack and argue for your limitation. Now, Sai Baba, because he's a cosmic avatar, is the one that can see the whole picture and the many lifetimes in which the individuals we were just discussing and the ones that are on the current world stage and their families exchanged roles again and again. So the conflict only changes historical venue and the cultural costuming, but continues again and again with those souls involved until they get to the point they awaken. And when they awaken, then they can start to engage in dialogue instead of mutual destruction. And then they can move towards forgiveness and begin to develop genuine understanding of each other's hearts and true fellowship. And then only does peace prevail in that relationship. Well, you might say, well, what about all the innocent victims caught in the crossfire of any conflict? And I'm sorry to say, but there are no such things as innocent victims, or a victim of anything. There are no victims. Every individual that is caught up in any area of conflict is there because they have been in the past a perpetrator or participant in that scenario. The lesson of forgiveness, healing, restitution pertains to all that are involved in any area of conflict. What's so interesting is that you won't even be remotely involved in any area of life unless you have karma with it. And that can be both positive and negative. But all karmic action creates reaction or repercussion. So karma is really the basis also for your ambitions. Why do people have ambitions? For example, to sail across the Atlantic, or be the first woman to fly a plane across the Atlantic, or be the first in your country to to get the gold medal in the Olympics, or whatever. That is all fueled by karma. Past conditioning, past situations, past choices, past areas of participation that have driven that soul to focus in that area, in many cases, to the exclusion of everything else. That's karma. Karma is what drives, the slaves of the wheel of reincarnation and karma. So that's why it's so difficult to to truly live in spiritual awareness, you know, to where it's a daily practice. Because it requires maintaining unconditional compassion and forgiveness. And above all, impersonal neutrality. See, the soul is very impersonal and neutral. It has an unconditional, all-embracing love for everything and everyone, and yet it's very impersonal, not a personal thing. The wonderful book, The Impersonal Life, Elvis Presley used to order those by the hundreds at the Bodhi Tree here in Los Angeles and give them to all of his staff and all of his friends. The Impersonal Life was one of the early books that described what it's like to live in the impersonal state of spiritual awareness. So all higher initiates and masters live in this state. It's one of non-reactiveness. It's one of complete non-violence. The total refraining from any negative an inflammatory or judgmental speech, or any emotional outbursts. And these actually are the most fundamental lessons that one must learn in discipleship training before you ever step onto a true path as an initiate and master-to-be. You're going to have to master refraining from negative and inflammatory speech and emotional outbursts and learn to be non-reactive and harmless in thought, word, and deed. The deed is pretty easy. It's those little subtle thoughts that we allow to stay just a little bit too long in our mind. Yes. Becomes very close tolerant. So it's a matter of living as part of the solution and embodying the awareness by living at peace, first of all within one's heart and mind, and then radiating that peace to all within your environment. And that way we live as embodiments of higher spiritual awareness, lending support and energy toward the peace and the well-being of all beings, not just our country or our religion or our political persuasion. You know, Mahatma Gandhi, without a single act of violence, liberated the whole of India by simply not supporting or contributing to the problem. Non-cooperation with imperialism. That was his only ploy. That was it. And the power of his spiritual conviction inspired millions to follow his example and turn the tide of his entire nation. And that's the power of one who is fully occupying divine presence. We can occupy the streets of our respective countries, but if nobody is fully present in divine presence, it doesn't go very far. It peters out, which is what happened. It just peters out because there wasn't the presence of peace present. So that is how we can each contribute to the healing of our personal and national areas of conflict. Non-participation in exacerbating the conflict. What if we asked ourselves each time we went to post on Facebook or to tweet or to send a text, what if we asked ourselves, am I lending energy to conflict or peace? Am I promoting loving kindness or more divisiveness and polarization? And, you know, there's always people that say, well, should we just stand by and let evil people do whatever they want? No, of course not. But do the right thing when you're in such a situation or addressing such a situation, which very many times you're not. We're busy telling somebody on the other side of the world how they should think, govern their country, and what they should do. And we can't even govern our own household, or our own mind, or our own marriage, or our own children. So, it's important to mind your own business. And when it's not your business, to stand in loving support for the highest good of all people. Just send them the light for the very highest and most benevolent outcome possible. Pray mercy and grace and understanding and clarity over our world leaders, all of them. Don't contribute to more and more and more conflict and againstness. Don't slander the very leaders that you've elected into office. You will be held karmically accountable for those posts. So do your duty. If you're in law enforcement or the legal system or the military, you have to fulfill your duty to your nation, to your calling in life. But don't take it personally. Don't take it upon yourself to be the judge and the executioner. You know, you don't have karma when you kill, for example, when you're in the military or law enforcement. You know, your motive was not to kill, unless, of course, it was. If it was, then you, of course, get the karma. But if you're just acting in the role of your assigned duty, there's not karma affecting that action. So you see, it's always a matter of what you're doing inside your heart and mind that determines whether or not we're part of the problem or the solution. Even though, you know, the actions outwardly may sometimes look really similar. They look really similar. Like someone, for example, like a veterinarian that has to put your pet down. He or she is not doing that to kill the animal, but to release it from further suffering. See the difference? So every member of the spiritual brother and sisterhoods of light, both the planetary and the celestial lords of light, are known for their humility, harmlessness, compassion, and kindly natures. For these are the very first steps of the aspirant upon the probationary path prior to acceptance as a disciple. So the lesson of harmlessness must be practiced and learned. And you can always tell a real disciple because they refrain from inflammatory remarks and posts and opinions. So superstition, prejudice, and doubt are again part of living from a religious perspective, a theoretical perspective, a belief perspective, or hanging your truth on that of another person and not realizing it for yourself. Of Course in Miracles has some really interesting lessons on attack. One of them is, if I attack, then I am attacked. Why is that? If you believe someone else has the ability to be separate from you and to attack you, then you're attacked. You have the experience of being attacked. But it's not a reality, it is simply a result of the belief in attack. Then another lesson in A Course of Miracles is, I but attack myself. And again, that's the understanding that there is only yourself. All the many forms that you see around you are but embodiments of that one divine self, with a capital S. Not you, of course, as your personality, ego self, but you as your atmic self. So you can only attack yourself. And all forms of attack arise from the ego's position of separation and againstness. Tough lessons, huh? You see, there's just no wiggle room. So all of these conflicts must now, at this time, find some point of being played out and resolved. Because every time you incarnate and go back into that scenario, hopefully somebody will extend, as Jesus called in the Course of Miracles, the atonement. The atonement is the recognition of oneness. And with that comes the looking past the behavior to the original innocence that we all are embodiments of. For in highest truth, we've never left the heart of God. And Jesus said in the Course in Miracles that the holiest place on earth is where an ancient hatred has become a present love. That's the holy ground. And that's the purpose of all of this acting out right now in the world arena, of all of these issues. Everything is up in the air now. It's been flushed to the surface, so that finally we have a chance to address it from our heart instead of from our ego. From our heart instead of our mean-spiritedness, our hard thoughts towards each other. We have that opportunity to finally put it to peace and rest. Will we? Well, every day we have that choice, don't we? Every day we have the choice to look past, which is the Course of Miracles definition of forgiveness. You look past to the Holy Son of God, which is you and me and everyone. The Holy Son of God is your worst enemy, your worst nightmare, your worst outcome. If you can look past it to the face of the Christ, you will step free through grace. And the Holy Spirit will erase that entire timeline and historicity that went into creating that scenario. It will be blotted off the record. If you can remember to do that. If I can remember to do that. If we can remember to do that. But we can only answer for ourselves. We can only be responsible for ourselves. We can only be responsible for what we allow to enter and be entertained in our minds. Only you live in your mind. But in the divided state of mind, there is the ego and the Christ, the voice for error, and the voice for truth. And in the human state, we have the position of being the conscious chooser and decider between them. And based on who we choose as company, that one will walk with us, either on a path of error or a path of God's realization. And we alone can decide that. We alone can decide that. This karma cannot transcend into the next dimension. People who are not able to resolve that karma now before the final shifting into the next octave will be having to take embodiment on another earth at another time. Possibly one that's just now entering the Piscean period of time, according to some teachers. If that be so, then you're going to have to do the whole thing over again. Do you really want to do that? Is being right that important to you? Is nursing your grudges and grievances that important? Jesus teaches us in the Course in Miracles, love holds no grievances. And the grievances that we harbor hide the light of the world that we are. That is needed right now to illumine this planet and to be a light so that others can see their way more clearly. So, all these conflicts are coming forward at this time to be dealt with by those who created them. That is why all things must occur as they are. And if it's negative, outpicturing, these are unlearned lessons that we have an opportunity to learn by extending love and forgiveness now. Anything less than that will purchase you a return ticket to another Earth and another timeline, or you can do it again. Sorry about that, folks. The lights were blown in the building, and that's what happened. Anyway, I think you have caught my message for this evening, which is that the things that are playing out right now on the planet have to occur the way they are until somebody makes another choice. There's the opportunity to choose again, to go from conflict and waging war to meeting in understanding. And that has to happen. That must happen. Or the individuals will keep coming back to revisit these same scenarios at another time and place. Eventually, everyone will awaken. Everyone is in the political arena, the religious arena, the national arena, and in the individual alliances that you've formed in the different groups, because there's a similarity of karma that needs to be resolved and lessons to be dealt with. Everyone is in their little pods of consciousness for that very reason. That's why everybody's in the right religion, the right national venue, the right political umbrella. Everybody's where they need to be so that that which must occur can take place. And the entire concept of battling and competing for one-upmanship and victory must be recognized as a totally obsolete approach, totally unsuitable for the next octave of unfoldment. And thus, everything that's occurring must occur. And this entire world dream is for the very purpose of healing, forgiving, and balancing our former actions. Nobody gets cut any slack in this. You have to earn the right to walk as a master. And that is earned by awakening from the dream of separation to the reality that we are one life, one spirit, one love, one will. That's it. That's it. So once you clearly see the connection between what is happening in yourself and what happens in the world of your experiential reality or your experiential dream, you are beginning to see from the upper vision. Because the vision of the true self is one of clarity. It's a pristine clarity that is filled with such a sense of confidence and knowingness that there's just no place where doubt ever enters in. You know that you know that you know. And that is the blessing and the takeaway from taking the time to be in yourself, with yourself. Know that the only evil that exists resides nowhere else but within your divided mind. That divided mind is made of the warp and woof of selfishness, hatred, mean-spiritedness, and those are the only evildoers to be outed. And they're outed by your divine presence as love. And that, beloveds, is the real challenge before us all. So I hope this has been helpful to you. I'm sorry for the abrupt interruption in our flow, but I think we can all deal with that. And let's go out chanting, Anai Hu. Take a deep breath. All the beings in all the worlds awaken to the love and peace that is the reality and the truth self within us all. Baruch Hashem Adonai.